Hi there, I'm Juliet Nichols, founder and director of Pineapple Audio Production, and you're listening to the Podcasting Playbook. We're really lucky to be supported by some incredible businesses at Pineapple, so I just want to take a minute here to thank House of Kalmar, a self-care brand all about empowering you to reconnect with yourself. I tried their Love Bath Oil recently, and it is beautiful. We're also working on a podcast for them, so watch this space. And Audio Boom, one of the leading podcast publishers who help you get your podcast to Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you listen to podcasts. We use them for tons of our content distribution, so thank you very much. We are huge, huge fans. On today's episode, we are so happy to have the wonderful Bebe Lynch with us. Bebe is an accomplished journalist, writer, and broadcaster. She's written for many, many titles, such as Metro, Marie Claire, and Grazia, presented podcasts, and a BBC radio show, amongst many, many other weird and wonderful things. We've had the pleasure of working with her on a couple of different very, very fascinating podcasts, and I'm looking forward to getting into that today. So Bebe, would you like to tell the listeners a little bit more about yourself?
My name is Bebe Bernadette Lynch. I'm I throw the Bernadette in because I think that was proof that my parents didn't like me from a very early age. I'm a journalist and broadcaster because I kind of like to write and talk about things that really matter to me and that I think are hopefully funny and smart and interesting and thought-provoking. I'm also nearly 5'1", and I think that might got the short woman energy. Do you know what? I often mention my hair in an introduction. I haven't done it so far. So I've got, I mean,
your
you've met
excellent.
Me. Jules, how
I
good
talk
is my hair?
I hair a lot, actually.
Yeah, thank you. maybe too much. But yeah, I'm a journalist and broadcaster.
Definitely. And we met working in radio and audio. Now, I'm interested. Yeah. Aside from all the writing and the journalism, there's kind of two parts to your career, right? There's the writing and the journalism side. There's the audio and the podcasting side, but they very much converge, don't they? So how did you get into this whole world? Where did that all start? I don't think we've ever had this conversation, so I'm really interested.
I got into it quite late. So I'm 88 now. No, I'm not. I think my age is quite important to everything I'm going to say. So I'm 56 now, and I kind of think that figures, we'll talk about that later. I didn't get into journalism or any of it until I was 27. So before that, I wanted to be a singer and I wanted to be an actor and I hadn't. I mean, when we talk about talent, I was in an a cappella group called Vococo and everyone in the group was like amazing. Imelda Staunton was in the group before I joined. Brian Kennedy, whose song Captured, you must listen to it if you've never heard it, it's beautiful. So it was this, and Ian Bartholomew, you know, Olivia award-winning actor, amazing, amazing a cappella group. And I joined it and we sang at Ronnie Scott's and I was so bad and so nervous. I was singing the lead to Word Girl, Scritti Plitti's Word Girl. And I was so appalling. That's the day I decided to become a writer. And I was also working at Strong Room Studio, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant love of my life recording studio in Shoreditch. And I was just writing some blurb for one of the producers. And a woman who was a journalist, Jess McCalkin, had office space in the building opposite, an AI, Sourced Images, popped over and read what was on my desk and said, oh, who wrote this? And I said, me. She went, oh, you can write. And I thought, oh, I can write. And on the back of that, I applied to LCP. Without realising it was really a prestigious course and prestigious college, I had no idea, Jules, and got on. And the great thing about doing it when I was older was I was so driven by it and so into it. But everyone on course was going to the bar and stuff, not everyone, but, you know. But I was really like, no, I'm doing this. And the reason I go into such detail about what I did to start was it all came together to now. So in life, I think, as my friend Gemma said, well done on having a life so shit you made money out of it. So, but I think the only thing that's ever made sense in my life is my work. And what's made sense of my work is that nothing has been wasted. So when I was a performer, I loved singing. I loved singers. I loved the arts. I loved to perform. I've brought all that knowledge and that experience and that joy to when I interview performers now. So I did LCP. And then on my work experience there, I had work experience at Tatler, which was hilarious. Me, you know, cockney Bebe with double barrels. And then my first published work was in Sky. And then again, because I was older, I think I was able to kind of infiltrate magazines quite quickly. So I started working for Music Mags and then Women's Magazines. And the then editor of Company magazine sent me a really lovely letter saying that she wants to work with me because I called a vagina. Not quite sure what else I'm supposed to call it. Derek, perhaps. But so I quite quickly got into writing comedy stuff and sex stuff. And then celebrity interviews. I wrote on New Woman and I was their associate editor and Red Magazine's associate editor and New Woman's celeb interviewer and Sunday Magazine's celeb interviewer. And then I got columns in Grazia and GQ and Red and New Woman and built up this really like lovely career. And then my first ever radio was on the back of that was Lorraine Kelly. Wow. Had a show on Talk Radio. And I went on to talk about something I'd written and I loved it. Oh my God. And I loved her. And I got asked back a couple of times. And then the brilliant Sean Hughes had a show on GLR and I was asked back to be his guest a few times. And then I became my amazing friend, Joe Good's kind of second banana every Tuesday night on BBC Radio London. Still not quite sure what that means.
Is that an actual radio term or is that a U-turn, BB?
It's a term that producer Nick used to, David Mills, Baylen Leonard and producer Nick, radio men and comedians to a man, used to call us all second bananas whenever we would do stuff. So I think it's like a right-hand man.
Okay.
But so my journalism got me into radio. But what's important, I think, is my performing and acting and singing and music industry background was really important then and it's kind of carried through. So now, and so then I did the columns and then got more radio. And then I only got into presenting on my own 8 years ago. So I had a show on Soho Radio and I did that 6.5 years. BB Does Soho.
Yeah.
I was so proud of that name. And going from contributing to presenting is a totally different animal, but I loved it. And then I started doing BBC stuff, BBC Radio Sussex, BBC Radio Surrey, BBC Radio London, like actually, you know, presenting. Mm. And I love it. And then we got into podcasts, but it all kind of naturally merged. There was never a career plan. I did some TV in between that as well. I think my hair got me those gigs. But then what was interesting was the recession.
Mm.
The 2008 recession that Daniel Ruiz Tyson calls the Great Recession, and that changed everything. But that was, kind of career trajectory. It's been an interesting one, and I guess a really natural one. Yeah, that's a long version, isn't it, of what my career background was?
That's perfect. You touched a little bit on some of the challenges that you've come across, and obviously that it's got you to where you are now, which is brilliant. But do you want to talk a little bit about the recession and some of the challenges that you have come across that have got you to this point?
Yeah, the recession was devastating. I mean, my dad was diagnosed with terminal cancer in 2000. He died in 2008. So at end of 2007, he was diagnosed. And the phone stopped ringing. And I thought people were not ringing out of respect, giving me some space because dad was ill. No, they weren't ringing because the commission stopped. I mean, commissions stopped, Jules. And people, you know, in the recession, magazines and papers are funded by advertising and the advertising budget for companies dried up. So no one had money to put into them. So then they had to produce them really on a shoestring and using their poor staffers to produce all the copy and all the design or whatever, rather than using freelance they would use. And that's when the expression, you can do this for exposure. I'm so shocked by the expression. I just said it in a Sean Connery way, exposure. But you know, that's when exposure came into being. And it was, so you would go from, it's always too crass to talk about money, but let's do it.
Why not?
When I started out, I was lucky enough to be getting £1 a word. So for 1,000 words, I get £1,000.
Very nice.
Yeah, the minimum I'd get would be 550p a word.
Lovely.
After the recession, some places were paying £20 for 1,000 words. Some places would pay nothing and say it's exposure for more work that doesn't pay you. And some places, you know, now some places would pay $250, $300 or something, but it's still not the same. So yeah, that really changed what the kind of work you would do and what you would want to do. And I started out writing funny stuff and like celeb stuff and funny stuff, I guess because I call a vagina a vagina. I started like writing kind of sex stuff. And then, is this a fair thing to say? I started writing really, really personal stuff and I never intended to. And I never, it's really hard to describe it. I think the first really personal piece I wrote was when my dad died and my mum had died when I was 22. And I felt like when my dad died that I started grieving my mum, because when I was 22, I didn't know anyone else who'd been bereaved. And I didn't have the vocab for it. Do you know what I mean?
No,
and
I wasn't
given the space for it. And so when dad died, I felt like I was grieving mum and dad. And I wrote a piece about it in Grazia. And it got really amazing feedback. And I was really aware then that I was able to write that kind of stuff. But it's a bit of a slippery slope. It's a bit of a... Because then it's kind of like, you know, spread your legs journalism, I call it. It's a bit like, I'm sure that will catch on. And then I don't have children, and I've written a lot about not having children. And I guess that's, you know, it's deeply personal, and there's always an emotional price to pay. And I kind of hate that people know really how passionately I feel about some really personal things. But at the same time, especially with the baby stuff, it's really important for that conversation to be had, because
it's
massively important. It's something that Jodie Day from Gateway Women calls pronatalism, which is worshipping at the altar of parenthood and especially motherhood, and how, you know, the whole as a mother rhetoric and hardworking families rhetoric and the whole cost of living crisis now apparently only affects families. I mean, thank God I don't need to eat or live. And it's so actually it's really... You know, I kind of see that as activism, actually, in a way. But it's been so. I guess what I'm saying is the recession made me really have to look at what I could write and what I would write. And I think I crossed the line sometimes, across my own line sometimes, in what I would write now. So, like now, I might write really personal stuff again around the baby issue because I've kind of said it all. But there's other stuff that's going on in my life, or that has gone on in my life, that I wouldn't touch. And it's so. I guess answering your question, the challenge it threw up was basically, there was no money and you still had to live. And the challenge that's thrown it through up was kind of like a moral dilemma in like what you would write and what you'd get. I mean, I was asked to write really absolutely appalling clickbait stuff that I refused to do. I was asked to write by several titles that I refused to write for. And you have to really kind of draw that line. And it's really hard because, you know, people are talking now between the option of heat and eat. Well, that happened then.
Yeah.
That happened then.
So your way of kind of combating the recession and the challenges of that was, it seems to me, you kind of found a niche or a variety of niches that have actually carried on until today, right?
I mean,
you think about those things that you started off then, some of the podcasts that we've worked on, those are very much still the topics.
Yeah. And I think, and I guess I'm kind of pleased with that. But it's exactly that, darling. It's that whole thing of, you know, I think nothing is wasted with work, and I really love interviewing people, and I really hope that I'm a good interviewer. And I think if I am, it's because I can open up.
Yeah.
And I think people feel safe about,
exactly. There's safety there.
Yeah. And I feel that people, you know, if they've seen that I've written stuff like that as well, feel more comfortable. And so again, I feel like, you know, any personal thing I've written, any interviews I've done around that, I bring to stuff I'm doing now. So even if it's not me being interviewed, I'm interviewing someone else, and I'm bringing that knowledge and that experience and that reputation, hopefully, to that.
Yeah, it's massively brave, actually, some of the stuff that you write and some of the honesty that you bring to the podcast that we've worked on, the radio stuff that you've done. It does. It definitely does instill a kind of confidence in the people. You can hear it.
Does it feel weird for you as someone who knows me hearing me say stuff like that?
I don't think so, because I really think it's who you are. I think you're very genuine. There's no part of you that switches on a kind of like, and now I'm going to be brutally honest. No. It's just who you are. And that's what I love about it. It's actually really refreshing in a way that you go about things just being yourself and being that honest. And you, like you say, you can keep some elements of your life to yourself, and that's perfectly respectable. But it feels like you do a lot. You know, there's no part of you goes into an interview and just kind of, you know, ask the questions. That's just not you. It's not you. And there's something really wonderful about that.
Oh, thank you.
I think that's actually probably developed over the years that we've worked together. If I think about the different projects we've worked on, because we started working on a podcast for Metro, didn't we?
Yeah, Good Sex, Bad Sex.
Yeah, so an interview podcast. And that was fascinating. The kinds of people that, I mean, I got to hear you interview absolutely blew my mind, I think. I mean, I can't remember how old I was, Bibi, when I first heard you guys. But really, I think it opened my eyes in a way.
It opened mine. So I was co-presenting it with Miranda Kane, and Miranda's a brilliant stand-up and also a former sex worker. And the idea was that former sex worker and me, they put me as professional prude, which did make me laugh because I don't I'm not sure that's exactly the case. But I'm you know, let's say former Catholic, and maybe that makes more sense.
Yeah.
So when we were talking, Miranda would be like, yeah, like really unsure. We were very much a house of no judgment, which I really loved. And Miranda would be like, yeah, and da, 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 like she'd heard it all. And I'd be like, what the? And like, I'd love, like, wide-eyed, like, tell me everything. I would love it. And I thought that dynamic really worked and really, it was interesting. Do you remember the throuple, husband and wife and their girlfriend? And what was interesting about that is, I guess I would have thought that was his idea. I'm like, yeah, of course he's got a woman involved, another lady involved. And it wasn't. It was his wife's girlfriend. And then she moved in. And they were three of them. And they were so open about it all, and they were such an extraordinarily beautiful trio. He looked exhausted.
Sure, he
though. he was shattered. Yeah, that was such a great pod. And again, I loved meeting everyone. And again, I think I hope that we kind of made them feel that no one was saying what. But we were just like, what? You know, there's a difference, isn't there?
100%. And I really think actually, however many years ago we were doing that, it felt very different. It felt very groundbreaking to have that level of honesty. And I mean, eye-opening for listeners, eye-opening for me. I just remember sitting there absolutely bright red. I was like, oh my gosh, what am I listening to? What am I producing? But the stories that are out there and the relaxed way that you go about having those conversations puts everybody involved at ease around those topics. It's fascinating to see. You just have a way about you, Bibi, that allows you to, like you say, people can share their stories because you've got an interest and a genuine honesty.
That's really lovely.
It's true.
That's really lovely of you to say. Thank you, darling. And do you know what? Another thing I was going to say about that, again, the age things, I talk about my age a lot. I think that brings something to it as well, because I've lived.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I do think there's something there as well. And I've also, you know, I've been through any sexual revolutions. And so I'm kind of like, yeah, okay, that's interesting compared to that. Another thing that I really kind of feel passionate about talking about, and again, I hope this brings something to the podcast that we do together, is something that my friend Anna Goodman, the brilliant PR, calls real deal. And I really think there's a place for positivity, right? But true positivity. There's also that there's a kind of toxic Insta positivity, isn't it, that can make people feel worse and actually not really address anything. And so real deal is saying,
this has happened,
this is crap, this is shit, da, 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 da. Or my life wasn't linear, or our lives weren't linear. You know, one in five women won't have children. So that needs to be addressed, and the grieving around it is disenfranchised grief, the grief around it, the life around it, and how it's not tragic, and how you can still have a fulfilled life, but you're kind of cut short.
And it's going to take a lot of noise, and it's great that you're doing that, Bibi. It's going to take a lot of noise to cut through the cultural kind of norms that are so instilled in everything, and you're absolutely, the stuff that you draw attention to, mind-blowing
I find it, Andrea Leadsom's As a Mother, you know, that's shorthand for as someone who's got, you know, superior empathy and love. And you've never known love like, you know, what did Beyonce say? I finally joined the club and I've never known love like this. Thanks, Beyonce, very helpful. You know, but also real deal is like, you know, ageism, sexism, all these things that actually, in toxic Insta positivity, I don't want it to be funny, hey, just for the sake of it, to make it palatable. I don't want it to be like that. But there can be humor, there can be dark humor, it can be, you know, life is, it's funny. It's funny how bloody ridiculous. It's funny how I owned a flat and I left it because I had a neighbor that kept threatening to kill me. And then the recession hit and then I couldn't buy again. You know, do you know what I mean? That's funny. It's not funny. You kind of have to bring something to it. And I think, so this is going to something to say about podcasts, because you're talking about like the relaxed nature of and how groundbreaking Good Sex, Bad Sex was. What I love about podcasts is it gives you that space to do a format that you maybe couldn't do on radio, to touch on things in a braver way that you maybe couldn't do on radio. And I love radio. I love live radio. I love the liveness of it. But what I love about podcast is I love when it's produced and the sound design that goes into it, and that it's this incredible product that's still got that energy. It feels more experimental, even though it's been established for years, but the actual content, you feel like you can push it more. And I think that's brilliant. My kind of mission statement right now is to get the real deal stuff covered, to get women in their mid-50s on air. And when it's, you know, podcasts that I hear, and there's, you know, some fantastic ones, but they're often from aspirational in a very traditional sense, whereas I like aspirational from a little bit of a warped beginning with great hair.
Yeah.
Our friend Neil Cowling from Fresh Air Production, I was listening to him talk on a podcast and I loved what he said about this. He said that, you know, the thing about radio is there's just a limit of number of slots you can have. There just is. And with podcasts, the world's your what's it, you know. We can all, possibilities are endless. And I don't want to say in a kind of, we can all produce one way, because I don't believe that.
Very true.
I don't think it should just be recorded. Yeah, I don't think it should just be recorded on your iPhone and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Because I also think podcasts need to be a really brilliant quality. Let's give the content the quality sound, you know, it deserves, you know.
Yeah, and there is, to a certain extent, there is going to be a distinction between those that are produced well and those that aren't so much. And that makes sense.
So we did Good Sex Bad Sex together. And then you got sick of me.
Never. Never in a million years. What you mean is I went away and thought for a long time about how we could possibly work together again. It wasn't even that long, Bebe. Let's be honest. Weeks rather than
I don't think it was long. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, but let's talk about that. So we then, I mean, this is absolutely your baby. The Frank podcast was another fantastic production that we worked on together, right? Tell me a little bit about it.
So Frank is another example of an idea that wouldn't have got made on radio and a space that actually you can just explore some really hilarious stuff. So I'll praise Steve Frank. So the brilliant team at Real2 Media and you, of course, Pineapple, made Let's Get Frank. Let's Get Frank was my idea because I'll do this quickly. I was on Brighton Beach ages ago talking to my friend Nate and saying, okay, Nate, I'm sick of being on my own. Empty your mind. What's the name of the person I'm going to marry? Who is it? What's he do? And he said, James Architect. So after a very happy few years Googling James Architects and never finding one, I asked the same question of my friend Max. And I said to them, okay, James has gone. Empty your mind. Who am I going to marry? And they said, Frank, human rights lawyer. And so then we set about making a podcast where I date Franks, who are human rights lawyers, to see, because the background is, and I know you're going to find this astonishing, especially considering the hair, my last relationship ended the day after Diana died.
I love that fact so much.
And there's no connection. The police looked, nothing was found. So don't you bother. and so it was like, and I can kind of get first dates, but I never get a second date, Jules. So I was like, okay, what's going on? So the idea was I would date Franks and they would be Zoom dates because of the pandemic, and fantastic dating coach and your new colleague, Annabelle Knight, would give me a bit of a pep talk and then kind of watch the date, listen in on the date, and then give me a bit of a post-mortem. And, oh, I loved doing it so much. It was such a laugh. And actually, turns out I'm a freak. Turns out there's no hope for me.
Well, that's definitely not true. You had many, many very positive dates, didn't you? And I think as a listener with this one, again, your honesty, how many people would be willing to put themselves out there in the way that you did? It was a brilliant, brilliant listen. And I think everybody can learn from that. It was hilarious. You did meet some really interesting people, whether they were necessarily right for you or not. But it was wonderful to listen to. It really was.
Oh, well, it's because it was brilliantly produced. Oh, it was, I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. And I don't know. I love working with the team and these teams. And I love, are there many pods about 56-year-old women dating?
I feel that we've carved out a niche there.
Do you know what I mean? And I love that. I love that. I think, because I mean, would you agree that the perception of podcasts is that they're a young person's game or two male comedians talking about their favourite fish fingers?
I mean, I would fight against that. I think there is an element of that, definitely. And there's an ease in putting together a podcast like that. But how much more creative and exciting is it to do something like Let's Get Frank? And it really was. It really was. The different elements, the different people, and, you know, guests from all over the world. It was it was a learning experience for sure.
Yeah. And that's another thing. It's like, that's another thing that the podcast, and it's weird because we used to record Good Sex, Bad Sex in person, didn't we?
Yeah, and we wouldn't have actually thought about it any other way, I don't think.
No.
We've had the odd guest on Skype, if I remember well.
Yeah.
And we'd, you know, it would all feel very complicated. And then suddenly the pandemic comes in, and actually remote recording suddenly seems very simple and a bit like, why have we not done this before?
Do you feel there's a different energy, though, or dynamic?
I don't know. I don't know. I think you're probably better placed to say that, Bibi, being the one kind of hosting and talking to people. I think there's probably an argument for both sides, and it's probably personality based as well. Some people actually probably do better sitting in their living room with a microphone in front of them, maybe with even without a camera on, you know?
Yeah.
There's less pressure there. Other people will bounce off the energy of being in a studio and that adrenaline and that excitement. So I think it probably goes both ways. There's something to be said about both. What do you think though? You're sat there hosting. So
as an interviewer, it's kind of nicer to have the energy of someone there. But Zoom helped that, because at least you could see them. You know, it wasn't so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it just affords you, you know, you can have a guest from anywhere around the world. I mean, how incredible is that?
Right. I think the cool thing now is that we have options. Yeah. You know, we're in a world now where we can go and jump back in the studio if that's what we want to do. And we want to get that energy, and we all happen to be in London or whatever. But yeah, nice that we have more options for high quality recording. Yeah. I think that's the cool thing that's come out of it. So we've touched on a few bits and pieces about what has made a good podcast for us, that kind of something that's a little bit different, the creativity, the production. What other things can we talk about that make a podcast really good?
Oh, that's a really tricky one. I think,
or maybe other podcasts, you know, are there any that you listen to and love, and what makes them good?
The one that got me, the podcast that got me involved, it, you know, kind of captured me, and it's the one that everyone's going to say was Serial.
Yes. That was a moment.
Oh, that was such a moment. And then there was another one, and I'm going to forget what it was called, but was it something like In the Valley? And it's about Tracy Lord or Lords, she was a porn star, and it had the same kind of documentary feel that Serial had. And it was, it's so fascinating. It's basically talking about, she was only in the porn industry for a couple of years, but she became a huge star. And then when she came out of the industry, she said actually she was underage.
Oh, wow.
And so it's this whole thing about, you know, how did that happen, and da 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 da. And it's, again, I guess you can get it for live radio, obviously, but obviously, you know, a doc that's made for radio that can be edited and sound design on it could do this too. But it seems to be a lovely way that podcasts have started and are going as well, and seem to have kind of really mastered. It's just that those kind of documentary pods, I love them. I think a podcast works if there's a story.
Yeah.
And that story can just be that me, you and Miranda are interviewing a mistress who's got her slave called Chicken Boy, who in the studio wasn't allowed to answer our questions unless he got permission from her.
Eye-opening guest.
But do you know what I mean? It's like, so there's a story there. There's a story. You know, my brain has gone about who, you know, the naked cleaner. Why are you cleaning places naked, Toots? But, you know, there's a story behind that. There's
nothing wrong with that.
That's the whole thing, isn't it? That's the whole thing about journalism and communication, and radio and print and online.
Yeah.
And pods.
Well, sharing those stories makes it okay.
Yeah, sharing those stories makes it okay, and sharing those stories makes it, you know, just educational and not in a dry way.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think anything has to be done in the dry way. And I think even actually if something's done in the dry way, it could still get catchy. But I guess key as well is great guests, like researching guests fully and making sure they're great for the connection.
I think all the stuff you're talking about is the essence of it. But I always go back to, as a listener, you need to really feel like everyone in the room is having a good time in whatever way that is. And I think then as a producer, it is your job to try and go in there and make sure that people enjoy themselves, because that's what comes through. You know, whatever the topic is, you want to hear people who are really engaged in what they're doing, I think. And then you get that feeling, don't you? You get engaged because the people that you're listening to are. And that's, I really think that's the main job of a producer, aside from the tech, aside from the prep. You've got to make everybody in that room feel comfortable. And that's the beginning and the end, in my opinion.
And magazines used to be like, and kind of breakfast radio shows used to have that feel. It's like, you'd want to be part of that gang.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. And if I think about the projects that we've been talking about, BB, that really is the feeling, you know? Good sex, bad sex. You want to be part of that gang. Let's get Frank. Same thing.
And do you know what I loved as well? I loved about Frank as well was that it was a kind of an appointment to listen for people, which I loved. I loved that. And people were really invested in that. Even now, if I tweet, you know, I've just had a date, it's a call Frank. What about Frank?
Yeah,
don't tell Frank.
Exactly. It's one of those things. It's another one of your things, BB, that is a sort of niche, isn't it? It's part of you. So I love that.
I'm all about the niche. When does how many niches can someone have? It's so weird.
I love it.
I was just going to ask you something. So with magazines, because I started out in magazines and newspapers and radio stations really have their demographic worked out, don't they? Even to the extent of which shop they shop at.
Mm.
You know, are they Waitrose? Are they Aldi? You know, which shop do they go to? Yeah. How do you do that as a producer for a podcast? Because a podcast, anyone can listen to it.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you do in the same way. To some extent, of course you do. You think, you know, who is that listener that you want to speak to? But I think the process really is the same, especially with the backgrounds that we've both got. It's going to be naturally a bit like that, isn't it? Yeah, it's out there for everybody to listen to. And in a way, you don't want to narrow it down too much. If people are Googling, you know, good sex, bad sex type topics, then, you know, come on in. I think that's it really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe it's more of a personality, a broader personality type, X person who's interested in dating podcasts.
So it's the subject matter rather than
where they shop, for example. I think that's what it is, because that's the thing with podcasting is people going searching for those things that they've already got, like maybe a bit of an interest in, or their friends recommended to them. And that's a special thing about podcasting, I think. So that does make it a bit broader. We've talked about all these amazing projects that you've been working on over the last few years, Bibi, but what is next? What are you going to be doing next?
So Let's Get Frank has just wrapped. Do we say wrapped in the podcast world?
It's a great word.
Let's Get Frank has just wrapped. That's you know, available wherever you get your podcast. I just guested on the Breakup Monologues, which was super fun, with Zoe Lyons and Hal Cruttendon and obviously the fabulous Rosie Wilby. Mm. And I'm now at that exciting stage where I've just had some really great podcast meetings with some really great podcast production companies. And I'm kind of... And a TV production company, getting quite psyched about talking about the real deal stuff that I've talked about before, which is, you know, I kind of want to corner that market. Yeah, women aren't invisible after 50. You know, who says? I say. So, you know, I want to do podcasts that are all about all these issues that, you know, need to be talked about, and not in a dry way. Mm. And I'm still writing. Telegraph, Metro, Platinum Magazine, Metro.co.uk, Guardian, across the board. But yeah, my heart and soul, genuinely, I can't believe I came to broadcasting so late. I love it. I love it. So that's where I'm. And also there's a one-woman show that might be happening with my name on, which
I'll be there for in the front row.
I can't even begin. I can't. Well, if you're there in the front row, you've got to hold up dummy balls, because I can't remember. I can't remember my siblings' names at the moment. So I don't know how I'll remember an hour's worth of material. Yeah, so maybe doing a one-woman's comedy show as well, which will be challenging. Jules?
No. Oh my gosh, you can chat like that. You'd be great. It'd be great. All of this stuff, it's amazing. I don't actually know how you manage to juggle it all. It's fascinating, Bibi. So I'm excited to see.
Thank you, lovely.
Bibi, thank you so much for being our guest today on the Podcasting Playbook. We really, really appreciate it. And thank you for tuning in and getting to know a little bit more about the work that we do at Pineapple. Don't forget to follow and review for more podcast episodes coming your way soon. And before I go, I just want to take a minute here to let you know about something I'm really excited we're doing, the Pineapple Awards. We're all about investing in young people and supporting them as they get into the audio, podcasting and radio industries. So we've set up an annual opportunity to showcase the talent of young people. They'll get great prizes, real industry experience and the chance to network with the biggest bosses of the industry. And there are three categories: Best Producer, Best Editor, and Best Creative Idea. The Pineapple Awards are supported by Leo Bites, Stella, House of Kalmar, Ice Cool Design, and Audio Boom. The closing date is February 28th, 2023, and all the details are on the Pineapple website, so get entering now.